Night two of the WWE draft was unfortunately a lot like night one. We had the second night, same format that we had on SmackDown. If you sat through those 2 hours on Friday, you know exactly what you were going to get here tonight for the final night of this 2024 WWE draft. It was better than SmackDown, but not by much. You know, on SmackDown, we had 4 rounds of picks. Raw being a longer show, we had 6 rounds tonight. Now that the draft is over, my main takeaway is this. They need to seriously reevaluate doing these drafts going forward. You know, once they installed Adam Pearce as the GM on Raw, they made Nick Aldis officially the general manager on SmackDown. What they should have done, looking back at it, you could have had a series of trades orchestrated between the two GMs. You want to set up a war room? You want to have the two GMs sit down in the same room at the same table and go back and forth? You want to build an entire show around it? You want to build an entire week of shows around it? You want to build an entire month of shows around it? That's fine. But you've got two GMs now, and you could have engineered a series of trades. Doing a draft where 70 or 80% of your roster stays exactly the same makes for boring television. Now, that might be fine for social media. You want to post that so-and-so is staying on Raw, so-and-so is drafted to SmackDown, and it's the same people staying put. You want to make an announcement online about that? That's fine. You want to have a YouTube special? That's fine. But it makes for boring TV when the vast majority of what we see are people staying exactly where they are. And I know you're always going to get some of that. You know, going in, the entire roster on Raw, the entire roster on SmackDown is not going to be blown to kingdom come, and it's not going to be completely rearranged. But man, when you have to sit here round by round like that, and they put the graphic up on the screen, and then you see, it really drives the point home. Like, what was the point of this? What exactly was the purpose of this exercise if the vast majority of people are going to be exactly where they were when this whole thing started? It makes it completely useless. Like I said, that might be fine if you want to take a different approach. As a television vehicle, I don't think it works. It doesn't work as well. Now, if you have the GM doing trades, Adam Pearce, Nick Aldis, they're working the phones, right? They're negotiating certain deals. And then you have your traditional NXT call-ups, because you know it's not like they can only call up NXT people during the draft, right? You can call up NXT people anytime you want to. So there's no reason that they can't have the typical NXT call-ups coupled with the trades, and you can shake up the rosters in that way without it having to interrupt the television shows and have all of these pointless segments where you trot the legends out there to announce picks that nobody cares about, and you have all these people gobbling up airtime that could be put towards stories and matches and other things. That was the mistake, because all it did really was bog down these shows. Friday night was a boring episode of SmackDown. Raw tonight was not much better. Raw tonight was marginally better than SmackDown on Friday, but these were not two great shows. One change I would have made, for example, given the format that they went with, I would have had more interaction, not just with the GMs, but also just interaction with the GMs like a Kathy Kelly or a Kayla Braxton, interviewing Nick Aldis and Adam Pearce during the course of these shows to really pick their brains about, why did you make that move? Why did you move so-and-so in this round? Why did you draft this person in round three instead of in round two? There were some head-scratching moves in this draft, whether it was the Bloodline on SmackDown, the Judgment Day tonight, certain people, AJ Styles moving in the fourth round on Friday, even though he's challenging for the WWE title coming up this weekend. There were some moves that just frankly made the GMs look completely incompetent. And if there was any sort of logic behind it, it would have been nice to, hey, let's go to the back and find out why Adam Pearce made the move that he made. Since they were going for a more sports-like presentation of what they were doing, that would make sense. And they didn't do that. We didn't get enough of that on these shows. We got actually hardly any of that on these shows. They would show Nick Aldis and Adam Pearce sitting in the war room, and then they would trot them out there like they did tonight to announce, I think it was the final round, round number six. But that is a change that I would have made, and it would have fit in with, again, the sports-like presentation that I think they were going for, but they didn't do that. Now, night two, one of the benefits of night two over night number one of this draft is that we had more NXT involvement. And that's something I was looking for on night one. We didn't really get it. I think we had one NXT call up on night one. We got a lot more of that here on night two. The three NXT names, if you listen to episode 859 of the podcast this weekend, there were three NXT names that I pitched, one of which should have been obvious to anybody, which was Ilya Dragunov. He just lost the NXT championship to Trick Williams. He had a match on Raw a few weeks ago. He seemed destined for a call-up. Ilya Dragunov, Lyra Valkyria, and Blair Davenport. Those three were all drafted tonight on Raw. So I like that. And those are the moves I think that make sense. Dragunov on the main roster is a no-brainer. Dragunov has done it all in NXT. And he is going to fit in just fine on Monday Night Raw. Because when you look at Monday Night Raw, okay, and this is one of the good things that we got out of this show tonight. When you look at Monday Night Raw right now in the Raw roster, we have Drew McIntyre, we have Sheamus, we have Gunther, and we have Ilya Dragunov all on the same show. For that reason alone, Monday Night Raw wins the draft. You want to talk about who won and who lost? You want to talk about which roster, which brand came out of this stronger than the other? That would be Raw. And that doesn't even include CM Punk and all the other people that Raw is keeping and still has on the roster. Raw wins just for those moves alone. But there was something else that Triple H had to do. And I've been talking about this now for several weeks. The women's division on Raw. And it was made abundantly clear when Rhea Ripley had to vacate her title and she went down with an injury. The Raw women's division was in shambles. And it's been very weak for a while now. I don't want to make it sound like just because Rhea Ripley got hurt, the Raw women's division went to shit. The Raw women's division went to shit long before Rhea Ripley got hurt. But it was even worse coming out of that injury because you look and you go, well, who do they have, right? They put the belt back on Becky Lynch. I mean, I say back. She hasn't been champion for a while, but they put the belt on Becky, which we've seen a bunch of times before. And you look at all the other women on the roster, and there's not a whole lot there to get excited about. And I said, coming into this draft, one thing that Triple H needs to do, more so with the Raw women's division, he needs to rebalance things. He needs to give this division a shot in the arm. He's got to get some new faces on Raw. He's got to mix up. I mean, he's got to do something here, especially with Rhea going down. Charlotte's not going to be coming back for a while. My guess is she'll be on SmackDown anyway, because that's where Andrade is. And Triple H did just that. Raw, the women's division on Raw, got a huge shot in the arm tonight, especially with some of these NXT women that were called up. And so that is something that that brand and that division desperately needed. So that's one thing I'm happy that he at least took measures to fix coming out of this. And that division is going to be better off for it. The other thing about the show tonight, and it might have been lost because they were busy talking about the draft and talking about The Fall Men. If you didn't know, that's a new movie coming out. It's called The Fall Men. I mean, they were talking about it so much, even they were making a joke about it on commentary, Michael Cole and Pat McAfee. They couldn't say it enough times. What was that movie? The Renfield? Fucking Renfield movie that they wouldn't shut up about some time ago? Made me not even want to see the fucking thing. I don't know that it quite reached Renfield proportions, but yeah, they wouldn't shut up about the Fall Guys. But what I was going to say is, this was the go-home show. This is the go-home Raw before Backlash. They have a pay-per-view coming up in France on Saturday. So this doubled not only as a draft episode of Raw, but it doubled also as the final Raw before the next pay-per-view. And they did nothing on this show to get me excited for Backlash. But then I look at the Backlash card and I realize one of the reasons for that is because Backlash is basically a SmackDown pay-per-view. There is one Raw match on that show and it's Damian Priest defending the World Heavyweight title against Jey Uso. Every other match on the card, and I would expect they'll add one or two more matches, maybe a kickoff match, maybe. Every other match right now is a SmackDown match. Cody Rhodes against AJ Styles is a SmackDown match. Bayley, Tiffany Stratton, and Naomi is a SmackDown match. Randy Orton and Kevin Owens against the Bloodline is a SmackDown match. Bianca and Jade against the Kabuki Warriors is a SmackDown match. So you see, no wonder it didn't feel like much of a go-home show tonight, because it's basically a blue brand show on Saturday. So no wonder I don't feel any more excited about that show than I did when I came into this television program tonight. There is a lot to go through here, and we are going to do that because this is your Monday Night Raw review. It is April 29th, 2024. This is the final stream here for the month of April. And this is pretty much a guarantee at this point. This is going to be the biggest month ever on the channel. So I want to say thank you for that. And I hope you are enjoying all of the content. Lord knows there's been a lot of it this month. So I just wanted to say thank you. Like, subscribe, super chats are open. 450 likes is the goal tonight for Be the Booker. If we can get through all of this draft stuff, perhaps we'll have time for that at the very end. Let's get into it here. Raw opened with a shot of the parking lot outside. They were in St. Louis. They were in Kansas City. And Logan Paul rolled up to the building in a Rolls Royce. He had iShow Speed with him, the annoying YouTuber who got beat up at WrestleMania. He got kicked into another dimension by Randy Orton. Just one of the greatest things I've seen all year. So he was back. Now, I don't know if it was just the way that they filmed this. Logan Paul gets out of the car, and he stands there, and you see the trunk of the car opens, and then out comes iShow Speed. Now, I don't know if he was actually in the trunk of the car. I'm not sure, but it looked to me like he crawled out of the trunk of the car, which is, makes it so much more funny to me. So I don't know if he did or not, but iShow Speed, Logan Paul, they were not alone because Logan Paul had a friend with him. And the friend that Logan Paul was there with was the quarterback of the Kansas City Chiefs, the Super Bowl MVP, the Super Bowl champion. Patrick Mahomes was on Monday Night Raw. He was with Logan Paul. He was with the heels. He's hanging out in the parking lot with Logan Paul. The Judgment Day walks up to them. Everybody's buddying up to each other. Everybody's all smiles. And no, Patrick Mahomes did not come out of the trunk with iShow Speed. Now, Mahomes, when they showed him on camera, he got a huge reaction. But then, I don't know, to my ears, it sounded like he was getting some boos. I don't know. I have to go back and listen to it, but were those some boos that I heard for Patrick Mahomes there from the crowd? That was surprising. But look, that's a big get for them to get him on the show tonight, and this was not the last that we would see of Mr. Mahomes. So that was a big get. But like I said, they were welcomed by Damian Priest in the Judgment Day. Priest congratulated Logan on all of his success. Logan did the same. He said that Priest would destroy the ugly Uso at Backlash. And all of these men walked together into the building. And that is how the show started. When we came into the arena, Michael Cole and Pat McAfee introduced the show. They were from ringside, but they had them piped in over the PA system so everybody could hear them. And they ran down the rules of the draft here, night number two. We had six rounds tonight. So that was going to be a total of 12 picks for each brand. That's compared to four rounds that we had on SmackDown. All the champions, the main roster champions, they said nothing about NXT. All of the main roster champions, frozen. They are draft protected, ineligible to be drafted. The women's tag team champions are eligible, but they float. If they were to lose their titles, then they would end up on whatever brand they were drafted to. And the roster is locked next Monday, which is the Monday after Backlash. That is when the rosters officially take effect. So those were the rules for the draft. Pretty straightforward stuff, same as we talked about on Friday. The new women's world champion, Becky Lynch, she was out to the ring first. She delivered a short promo about winning the title and reminded everybody that it was in this building 6 years ago that Nia Jax broke her face. It was in that very building. Now, back then it was called the Sprint Center. Now it's called the T-Mobile Center. So it's got a different name now. She said it took nearly 2 years to regain the title, but she didn't want to just hold the title. She wanted to defend the title. She wanted to defend it and be a fighting champion. Liv Morgan made her entrance. and joined Becky in the ring. And Morgan said that Becky owes her one because she's the one who took out Rhea Ripley. She talked about still being on her revenge tour, and she won't stop until she gets everything she wants. And Becky conceded that, look, I wouldn't be the champion right now were it not for what you did to Rhea Ripley. But you would be the champion right now were it not for what I did to you last week. So that brought out Nia Jax, who came on out, even though she's on SmackDown now. Again, the rosters don't lock until next week, so we had a mix of Raw and SmackDown talent on the show tonight. Nia comes out, and Nia says that, I dominated you two last week, and I should be the champion right now. Lucky for you guys, she says, I got drafted to the Superior Show. Bayley, Naomi, and Tiffany saw on Friday that she'll be the champion soon on SmackDown, God forbid. But tonight is her last night on Raw. And the crowd let out a big cheer when she said that. They were very happy. And Nia Jax will no longer be with us on Monday nights. Where is Camille, says Austin. Word on the street is that Camille has signed with AEW. Apparently, Camille has been under contract for the past 2 months. Very similar to Mercedes. Mercedes Moné was also under contract for a few months before we saw her on TV, but that's where she's headed, which is another big pickup for that women's division. Liv Morgan, when Nia tried to get into the ring, because Nia said that if I'm leaving, I'm taking one of you with me. So Liv got up and drop-kicked Nia to the floor, said that that sounds like a challenge, and if it is, I accept. And they played Liv's music, and Nia left. Pretty lame opening. I mean, you know, they didn't have much to say here in this segment. But all the Liv Morgan fans who were upset last week that she did not win that Battle Royal and she did not win the title, this is why. Because she's going to be working with Becky Lynch. And there's a very good chance she'll end up with the belt at some point. So it's not as if all hope is lost. Okay, climb out, climb in from the ledge. I don't want you to hurt yourself now. There were a lot of very upset Liv Morgan fans after last week. She is going to be wrestling for the championship. It's okay. Going to feud with Becky until Rhea comes back. Now, after a break, the founder, the whole reason behind the Women's Evolution, Stephanie McMahon, right? Just ask them. They'll tell you. Stephanie McMahon, she was like, she right there, she was the visionary behind the entire revolution that we had all those many years ago. Stephanie McMahon was back on Raw, all by herself here to make the announcements for the first round draft picks here for night two. Stephanie announced that with the first pick of the first round, Raw selects Gunther and Ludwig Kaiser because they come as a package deal. No more Giovanni Vinci. He is now on his own. He has officially been kicked out of Imperium. So Gunther and Kaiser are the first pick of round number one. With the second pick of the first round, SmackDown selects Jade Cargill. So Jade staying put exactly where she is. With the third pick of the first round, Raw selects Io Sky, Asuka, Kairi Sane, and Dakota Kai, Damage Control. And with the fourth and final pick of the first round, SmackDown selects KO, Kevin Owens. As Pat McAfee pointed out, SmackDown selected two people. Raw selected six. So, good job there by Adam Pearce. You know, Gunther all by himself makes it all worth it for Raw, but interesting, you look at the first round here, no Drew McIntyre, no Judgment Day, no CM Punk in the first round. Now, the big change here, Damage Control moving from SmackDown to Raw. And that's huge because the Raw women's division needed that shakeup. And with that one pick in the very first round, they added four names to the women's division on Raw. That's huge. Everybody else stays put right where they already were. You know, now Gunther had done at least one interview this week, and he was teasing the possibility of wrestling Cody Rhodes. He and I are destined to you know, fight each other and work together. That's going to have to wait because they are on separate brands. But very interesting how Bianca Belair on SmackDown Friday and Jade Cargill tonight on Raw, they both end up being the first round draft picks when it comes to both of these shows, which is pretty cool. And I think it's a pretty big endorsement of both of them. And of course, the two of them are going to be challenging Asuka and Kairi this Saturday for the women's tag team titles. So that was the first round. And our first round pick, Gunther, was in the first match of the night, one-on-one with Xavier Woods of the New Day. These are also the first two men to declare for this year's King of the Ring tournament. Multiple glitches throughout the match. I didn't track to see where they took us, if there was a QR. I didn't even notice if there was a QR code. They've been doing the glitch stuff now for a few weeks. It's the Uncle Howdy stuff. The thing is, though, like, it was happening to the point where it was becoming annoying, and it was actually distracting from the show. So, you know, it's one thing when they do it and it's kind of subtle, but when they do it a lot, it gets very annoying. Michael Cole said the King and Queen of the Ring matches are going to begin next week, and the tournament will conclude in Saudi Arabia. I assume that means just the finals for the men, the finals for the women. I think that's how it worked last time. Woods hit Gunther with a forearm and then pulled the top rope down when Gunther charged at him. That sent Gunther to the floor. Woods tried a basement drop kick through the ropes. Gunther moved out of the way, and then he chopped the soul out of this man. He chopped this man down to the floor. He chopped us right into a commercial break. After that, Gunther blasted Woods with another chop, which led to Pat McAfee chanting New Day chops. Woods rolled to the apron. When he tried to come back, Gunther shoved him, and then Woods' right leg got caught in the ropes, and Gunther kicked at the knee. After another break, Xavier Woods is half dead, and he is crawling towards Gunther. Loud chop, like a gunshot went off from Gunther. This is probably Bret Hart's least favorite match of the night. If you know, you know. Gunther went to the apron. He stares down Kofi Kingston and smiles, heads to the top rope. He jumps off. He's going to go for his big splash. Woods, though, gets the knees up, and then he pulls himself up. Big kick. Gunther catches, though, and gets him in a half crab. Now, he has this thing sunk in. Kofi Kingston, he's thinking about, you know, what should I do here? He goes over, and he gets a towel. And he is going to throw the towel in for Xavier Woods. And Xavier Woods sees this. And he is begging Kofi, don't do it. I got this. Don't do it. I can do this. I don't need you. So Kofi tosses the towel into the crowd instead. Woods pushes himself up. He starts crawling towards the ropes. Before he could grab them, Gunther grabs the leg. He pulls him back to the center of the ring. Elbows now to the side of the head. He applies a modified STF. And Xavier Woods, in the end, has no choice but to tap out. I would not call this a squash. Yeah, we've seen squashes on TV. I mean, we've seen Bron Breakker. Yeah, he goes in there and beats people in 10 seconds. That's a squash. But this was very one-sided, is what this was. This was a dominant showing from Gunther here in this match. And for that reason, I did not think this needed to go 16 minutes. But 16 minutes and two commercial breaks is how long this thing lasted for. But he tortured this man. I mean, he put a hurting on Xavier Woods, and I guess we'll wait and see if they rematch at some point in the King of the Ring tournament. But this was fine. I just think it didn't have to go as long as it did. And Kathy Kelly was in the back to interview Jey Uso. They were in a hallway, or actually just outside of one of the hallways, which is going to be important here in a second. So she wondered if Jay was feeling any pressure heading into Saturday of Backlash, and Jay said no. He said Damian Priest would receive a yeet down. She asked about Logan Paul's earlier comment, and Jay said that he was glad that he's glad the company signed a Paul brother, but he wishes it was one with the winning record. Now, I mentioned the hallway. As Jay was being interviewed here in this segment, in the background, Liv Morgan walked out from one of the dressing rooms, and she's walking down the hallway, and she disappears. 20 seconds later, who walks out of that same dressing room? Dominic Mysterio comes walking out of that room. I guess that's also part of Liv's revenge tour. I guess so. Rhea Ripley will not be happy. We will see if that leads anywhere. I don't know when they're planning on getting Rhea back on TV. If she's going to be on TV while she convalesces, if she's having surgery, if she's already had surgery. There's been no further updates on Rhea Ripley. But I would imagine she will not be too thrilled about that. It's one of those things, you know, Triple H has these little Easter eggs in the backstage segments. He's been doing this, I mean, going back to when he first took over creative from Vince the first time, he's been doing that, and I like that. It's just, you'll see somebody meeting somebody else in the background, or something is going on. It just keeps you on your toes, so you have to be paying attention at all times. Logan Paul and iShow Speed were out after the break to deliver the second round draft picks of the night. Logan first, though, asked Samantha Irvin to give Patrick Mahomes a big introduction. He was sitting in the front row, and he also happened to be wearing his 3 Super Bowl rings. Just 3 more than the Dallas Cowboys have. So with the first pick of the second round, iShow Speed says that Raw selects... Oh, he screamed it, but he said that Raw selects CM Punk staying on Monday Night Raw. With the second pick of the second round, SmackDown selects the almighty Bobby Lashley, the Street Profits, and B-Fab, the Pride. Now they're acknowledging them as the Pride. Up until maybe the last couple of weeks, I don't think they ever mentioned the Pride on TV. Now they're mentioning that that's their name. With the third pick of round number 2, Raw selects Braun Strowman, staying on Raw. And with the final pick of the second round, SmackDown selects Tiffany Stratton, also staying right where she is on Friday nights. Not a single person changes brands in the second round of night number 2. Every single person that you see there on your screen right now is exactly where they were when they woke up early this morning. And Michael Cole on commentary, he pushes the fact that, well, you know, the GMs, they need to keep people that they already have so that the other brand doesn't steal them away. Yes, Michael, I understand that. And it makes for a very boring fucking draft. Now, as far as each of these picks here, interesting that Punk would get picked before Drew McIntyre. That played into a segment that came up later on in the show. Strowman. I thought there was a chance that Strowman would end up part of this Uncle Howdy stuff. And again, they very likely are going to be bringing back Eric Rowan to be part of that. That's the belief. Doesn't mean he still can't be, I suppose, but he came back here all by himself. Doesn't look like he's going to have anything to do with that. I thought he would make for a good opponent for Cody on SmackDown, you know, as a heel at some point. And honestly, and I'll talk more about this later, but, you know, you look at how these rosters shook up, you know, in the end or shook out. Cody doesn't have very many viable challengers on SmackDown. So again, Braun, I think, could have been one of those people, and they chose to keep him right where he was. And then Tiffany stays on Friday nights, which is good for SmackDown because Tiffany is great. Now, Logan Paul was not done, or we were not done with him. Him and his little buddy started to make their way down to the ring. And Logan said he spoke the truth when he said that Damian Priest would beat Jey Uso. Jey leaving the bloodline was a mistake because he could not win a title on his own, unlike him. So Jey Uso came out. And he asked the crowd if they thought that he could beat Priest and become champion, and they said, yeet. And Jey asked if they thought that he would beat up Logan Paul, or he should beat him up, and they went, yeet. So Logan talks some shit. Finn Balor and JD McDonagh, you could see them slowly making their way. They're marching down to the ring. Jey is outnumbered. Jey didn't feel like getting attacked, so he decided to go on the offensive, and he went after the Judgment Day first. But they all got the better of him. So Logan, at this point, he leaves the ring. And he walks over to the front row. And there's Patrick Mahomes, who stands up. And Patrick Mahomes, who has 3 Super Bowl rings on 3 of his fingers, takes the rings off one by one and hands them to Logan Paul. These are his Super Bowl rings. And Logan takes the rings and he puts them on each of his fingers. He gets back into the ring. He takes a swing at Jay. Jay ducks. And Logan ends up clobbering JD McDonagh in his fat head with the Super Bowl rings. So Logan Paul is standing there. He looks shocked. Finn Balor, he looks shocked. They don't realize that Jey Uso, who's watching this, and he's very amused by what has just happened here. He is standing right behind these men, also observing JD McDonagh laying on the mat, or sitting on the mat now. Then, of course, they realize, oh shit, he's standing right next to us, and Jey attacks Finn Balor. Logan Paul jumped him, though. Here comes Braun Strowman. He marches down to the ring. Logan Paul bails. Strowman ends up hitting Balor with a huge choke slam. Strowman started to chase Logan out. Logan left through the crowd. He had the rings on him, too. I don't think he gave them back to Mahomes. I think he still had them on his hand as he left. Strowman stopped by the timekeeper's area. He was not going to chase this man into the crowd. He turned back around. He started to walk away, and then he stopped. And you could see in the background behind him, there was Patrick Mahomes. So Braun turns around, he goes face to face, he confronts Mahomes, and Mahomes' teammates stood up on either side of him because they thought, okay, some shit's about to go down, we got to protect our investment here. And Jey Uso came over to calm down Braun, he calmed down the situation, so things didn't get out of hand, and the two of them left together. So there's your SportsCenter moment, right? We know they love that. Tony Khan had his SportsCenter moment last week. In the neck brace, talking about Harvey Weinstein. So now WWE has its SportsCenter moment here with Patrick Mahomes giving his Super Bowl rings to somebody else so they can use it as a weapon to knock somebody else out. That is a first. That has never happened before here on this television program. So that was, they made history tonight. That was unique. Now they got to get Pat, they got to get Tom Brady on the show now. You know, he's got more rings. Maybe they could do something with him. He'd make for a great fucking heel. I'm just saying. If he ever wanted to do something in wrestling, you talk about heat, he can get heat. But this was Braun Strowman's return. We have not seen him in almost a year. In fact, it's just shy of a year. He's been out. He had neck fusion surgery, his C4 and C5. The only appearance that he made since then, prior to tonight, was in August after Bray Wyatt passed away. He showed up on one of the tribute shows, I think for maybe the 10 Bell Salute. I'm surprised he's already back, to be honest with you. I mean, having had the neck fusion less than a year, I didn't think they would clear him until the year mark. But it's also possible they haven't cleared him to have a match. You know, him coming out and doing a choke slam was fine. I'm not expecting him to be back in the ring yet. I would still be surprised if he wrestled in the next few weeks. They might want to hold him out a little bit longer, but you know, he was getting close to his return, and you can plug him in on either show and you can have him in the mix, and he's a good player, he's a good role player to have on the roster. I just maintain that I think he would have made for a better opponent for Cody. Now R-Truth was in the back making some sort of deal with Chad Gable. Miz showed up and wanted to know what the hell was going on here. And this led to some very dumb comedy. Truth did not realize that it was the WWE draft and not the NFL draft. But, I mean, how can you blame the guy? You got Patrick Mahomes there, so the guy got confused. After Miz and Truth walked away, Gable turned around to go leave, and he got blasted by a kick, a haluva kick out of nowhere by Sami Zayn, who walked away. Elsewhere in the back, Kathy Kelly was talking to Booker T, one of tonight's draft analysts, and wanted his thoughts on the draft so far. Booker liked Jade Cargill and CM Punk as picks. Drew McIntyre showed up. He did not look very happy. He should look very happy. Drew McIntyre, for those of you who don't know, he has signed a new deal. Drew McIntyre is signed to a multi-year contract with WWE. He is said to have gotten what he wanted. Both sides are said to be very happy with the deal. I saw the Instagram video. The Rock even had a sword presented to him. The man was out to dinner with his wife, and here comes the maitre d' or whoever it was, giant sword delivered to Drew McIntyre, courtesy of the final boss. I guess that was his signing bonus. This man should have a big smile on his face. He's probably making good coin. But he didn't look very happy. And he asked Booker if he thought it made any sense for the guy who has had one match this year before getting hurt to be drafted over the guy who won the world title at WrestleMania. And Booker wondered, well, where is that title right now? I don't see it around your waist. McIntyre thought that he was living in a backwards world. He says he knows Booker. He knew Booker back in the day, and he knows him now, and he knows how Booker really feels about CM Punk. So he said to Booker, you've changed. And he walked away. We had Sami Zayn against Bronson Reed for the Intercontinental Championship. I have no idea why this wasn't promoted in advance. I did not see this in the preview on WWE.com earlier. I mean, they headlined their show a few weeks ago with the Intercontinental title match. I don't know why this wasn't announced. Zayn went for a move from the second rope. Reed caught him and put him down with a uranage for two. Reed followed up with a buckle bomb and a sit-out power bomb for a near fall. And then he sent Sammy to ringside. And he went to the apron, hit Sammy with a shoulder tackle, diving off the apron, took him down. Reed threw Zayn back inside. Sammy, though, caught him with a desperation haluva kick out of nowhere. Seemingly had the match won, but before he could get the pin, who shows up behind him in the ring out of nowhere? Chad Gable, who puts his arms around him, he waistlocks Sammy and takes him over with a stalling German suplex for the disqualification, the always wonderful DQ finish. Gable puts Zayn in the ankle lock. Michael Cole said that Gable is obsessed with winning the Intercontinental title. Gable released the hold, and then Bronson Reed came off the top and hit Sammy, flattened him with the tsunami splash, and that spelled the end of Sami Zayn. Gable picked up the belt, posed over Zayn's dead body with it until Bronson Reed scooped him up, gave him a Death Valley driver, and then Bronson Reed was the last man standing, and he posed with the Intercontinental title, and that is how the segment closed. Cheap finish, clearly building to a triple threat match on TV, unless they throw it on the pay-per-view at the last minute this Saturday. I don't see that happening. They've been pretty much, even when Gunther was the champion, very few times do I remember him defending that title on a PLE. He did against Sheamus a couple of years ago. That was the first Clash at the Castle. He defended it at WrestleMania last year, WrestleMania this year, which is great because we went through a period many years ago. That title was not defended at WrestleMania for like 7 or 8 years in a row. So it's nice now to see that title have a little more attention paid to it. But even still, it felt to me like they left Gunther off a lot of shows and he was defending the title a lot on TV. And it feels like that's probably going to continue. Yeah, we had Sammy defending in Montreal 2 weeks ago against Chad Gable. Tonight we had this match. So we'll see if they save this for Raw next Monday or what they decide to do. After the break, it was time for round number 3 of the draft, and they brought out JBL and Ron Simmons, the APA, to announce the picks. And with the first pick of round number 3 here on night 2 of the draft, Raw selects, in the words of JBL, the deadbeat dad, Rey Mysterio, Dragon Lee, Joaquin Wilde, Cruz del Toro, Zelina Vega, and Carlito. The LWO, the same Carlito who attacked Dragon Lee and beat the crap out of his stablemate last week and then ran away. Apparently is still considered part of the LWO. I guess he signed the LWO contract and he's not allowed to get out of the contract for a specified period of time. Otherwise, I'm not sure why he would have been drafted with the LWO. He seemed to make it pretty clear he was not going to be part of them anymore, but he was drafted with them. With the second pick of the third round, SmackDown selects Santos Escobar, Angel, Humberto, and Electra Lopez, Legado del Fantasma. They stay on SmackDown. With the third pick of the third round, Raw selects the Scottish Warrior, Drew McIntyre. Finally, Drew McIntyre is drafted in round number 3. This is like AJ Styles being drafted in round number 4. What's going on here? This is where it would have been nice to hear from the general managers. Why now? What was the motive? What was the logic behind Drew McIntyre going here in round number three? We didn't hear from them. We don't know. And with the fourth pick of the third round, SmackDown selects Shinsuke Nakamura. And so round number three was in the books. At least we had a few actual changes in this round. Look at that. Unlike round number two, where nobody went anywhere. We had a few changes here. I have no idea why Carlito was drafted with the LWO. Keeping them on the same brand, that makes sense to me, because Carlito has to wrestle these men. But why they were all drafted together is a mystery to me. They separated the LWO and Legado del Fantasma. They are going to separate shows. It also puts Rey and Dom back on the same show. And they had a little run-in a little bit later in the show. McIntyre being selected after Legado, very dumb, but it plays into the story that they were doing with McIntyre being so unhinged about CM Punk being drafted before him. What it does make are the general managers look like complete fucking idiots for not wanting this man on their show. Drew McIntyre has been the best part of Monday Night Raw for the last 6 months. This man has been a revelation, okay, compared to the way he used to be on this show as a babyface. Very boring. He is a former world heavyweight champion. He wrestled for the title at WrestleMania. He is one of their top stars. Why was he drafted after Legado del Fantasma? This is what I'm talking about. It makes the GMs look incompetent at their job. And Nakamura going to SmackDown isn't going to mean a damn thing. He'll be doing jobs there just like he was doing on Raw. So it's a lateral move. It doesn't really make a difference one way or the other. Now, Drew McIntyre, already in a bad mood, he walked out on stage. And he wondered if the APA had been drinking since Friday, because it was stupid how he was only getting picked in the third round. He said CM Punk was no longer anti-establishment. He was a corporate ass-kisser. He congratulated Punk on finally accomplishing something. Punk fractured Drew's elbow, or at least they credited Punk with fracturing Drew's elbow at WrestleMania. He was wearing an arm sleeve. Now, he did work the UK tour last week. You know, he gutted his way through it, but he badly hyperextended his elbow at WrestleMania. So he's working through that injury right now. However, Drew said, unlike Punk, McIntyre shows up every week because he's a real man. And with that, Punk's music hits, and it got the biggest reaction of anything on the show up until this point. And again, it was like pulling teeth trying to get a reaction out of these people tonight. I can't say that WWE gave them the most exciting show, so I don't really put all the blame on them, but they were very quiet. This whole episode really felt off to me. I don't know what it was. Maybe the crowd was part of it. There was something about it. I don't know. Just very, very off from the way it's been. But we hear Punk's music. No Punk. We don't see Punk anywhere. Turns out Punk was not coming out through the curtain. Punk was up in one of the luxury boxes. He was up in one of the suites. And Drew McIntyre looked up, and there he was. Punk said that, I'm not sitting at home. I'm right here, you little bitch. Now, he's calling Drew McIntyre a little bitch all the way from the comfort and safety of his sweet little box up there. Really? You're calling this guy a bitch? So Drew rushes to the back, because now he sees where Punk is. He's going to make his way up there. And after seeing all of this go down, Ron Simmons and JBL, they're still out there. Ron Simmons leans over into the microphone. He shouts, damn. And it gets no pop. That line used to get an audible reaction from the crowds. This got no reaction. It was actually very sad. Now, Bron Breakker was in the back. He was interviewed by Kathy Kelly.
Off is a direction you can fuck.
Chi-Town, 657, telling me where I can go with that $23 super chat. Hey, Chi-Town. Thank you, sir. Thank you for setting me straight. Braun was interviewed by Kathy. He said that Adam Pearce knew that he was the best pick because he was on Raw here to take over. Sheamus walked up to him, and Breaker got in his face. He was upset that he got interrupted, and Sheamus told him to calm down. Calm down, fella. I'm a fan of yours. Big fan of your work. And said that Breaker reminded him of a younger version of himself. Sheamus stopped speaking, though, when he saw Drew McIntyre storm right by him, because he was a man on a mission. He was on his way up to the suites, and so he stopped what he was saying, and he looked at Drew, and that was it. But teasing a little something here with Sheamus and Bron Breakker, there's a match I can get behind. See, that there is one of the benefits of shaking up the rosters. Because now what you want to do is you want to get matches that have not been done before. You want to get matches that have not been done. You want to get people involved from NXT who haven't worked with these main roster guys before. You got to add some new elements here to Raw and SmackDown to freshen things up. And Sheamus and Bron Breakker, if they're going to work together, and that's certainly what they were teasing here in this segment, is a match that I would like to see. Now we had Candice LeRae. This is a match I did not want to see. Candice LeRae with Indy Hartwell in her corner, one-on-one with Maxine Dupri, who had Ivy Nile in hers. Maxine hit an early fisherman suplex and then kipped up. She did her reverse caterpillar, elbow drop. She caught Candice in an ankle lock. Indy then ran Ivy Nile outside the ring into the ring post. This distracted Maxine long enough for Candice to escape the hold. And Candice hit the Wicked Stepmother. Curb stomp. We used to see her use that in NXT. And she scored the pin in less than 2 minutes. And this has been the case with all of these matches that we have seen from these women. Maxine. Now, to be fair, Maxine probably is better in smaller doses. At least until she improves. And, you know, she looked fine here. She didn't fuck anything up. Everything was cool. But we see this every week with Indy and Candice. It's a minute 30, a minute 45, 2 minutes. It's hard to get over. Yeah, there's a reason why when they mention their names and they go out there, they get a reaction. And nobody cares, right? They're not getting over. That's what happens when you have a bunch of sub 2 minute matches every week. It's hard to get over. Now, the announcers pitched it to footage from SmackDown of Carlito turning on the LWO and giving Dragon Lee a backstabber. Live in the back, Kathy Kelly interviewed the LWO, all the remaining members, without Carlito. And Ray said that he doesn't know why Carlito did what he did, but they have unfinished business. And at that moment, Dominic walked up to his father with his porn stash, told his father that the Judgment Day runs Monday Night Raw. And Ray asked Dom, how do you run Raw when you haven't even been drafted yet? And then Ray asked him, he was fixated on his son's lip. And he says, what is that on your lip? And he called him Dirty Sanchez. That popped me. It's my sense of humor. I got a nice little chuckle out of that. So now he'll be instead of Dirty Dom, he'll be Dirty Sanchez from now on. I guess that's how it works in the Judgment Day. So Dom said that Ray was lucky that he wasn't medically cleared, and then he stormed off. So Ray and Dom, back on the same show, because later on we would find out that Dom is in fact going to be staying on Monday Night Raw. So Drew McIntyre was shown walking through, he was on like the top level, and he was trying to open the door to each box and asking, where's CM Punk? Is CM Punk in this one? Is he in that one? So eventually he found the box that Punk had been in earlier, but there was no CM Punk. But what was there was an autographed CM Punk photo that he left behind for Drew. And at that moment, Punk's music played, and guess where Punk was? He was all the way down where Drew was before. And he entered through the curtain. No brace on his arm, which is a good sign. He had nothing. No cast, no brace, no wrap, no sleeve, nothing on the injured arm. So all McIntyre could do was just stand there with a big puss on his face, watching from the box, looking down. Punk said that he loves Kansas City and the people who inhabit it, so he did not want to waste any more of their time. He said that he wanted to do his thing in less time than it took McIntyre to be World Heavyweight Champion. So he looked over at Pat McAfee and said, Pat, time it. You've got 5 minutes and 46 seconds. To get my shit in, basically. And Punk took a seat, cross-legged, in the middle of the ring, looking up at McIntyre. Punk said that McIntyre prayed for him to get hurt, So he thinks it's a good thing that he returned the favor. And Punk said McIntyre is only good for tweeting, and that's why he was drafted before Drew. Punk said he's not out for revenge, but McIntyre has given him purpose. Punk said he was drafted before Drew due to simple wrestling economics, or you might say WrestleNomics. Punk said that he's the best in the world. He's the best in the ring, on the mic, even at the commentary desk. No offense, Pat. No offense, Michael. He said, look, I'm not mad. I'm not out for revenge because McIntyre had given him purpose. He says, losers hoped, losers prayed for things to happen. Winners make things happen. And Punk said that once he was medically cleared, he promises to make McIntyre's life a living hell. I think he's already doing that. He promises to make his life a living hell. The fuck has he been doing the last 2 months? Cost him the world heavyweight title at WrestleMania. I think he's already doing a pretty good job. So they played his music. McAfee said that you got it done in 2 minutes. The Punk and McIntyre stuff was the best stuff on the show tonight. It's usually the best stuff on the show anytime you get them in the ring together. Of course, that great segment of the year. All those weeks ago with Punk, McIntyre, and Seth Rollins. So this was very good. The eventual match between the two of them, it just feels like it's going to be a very big deal. And think about it. When CM Punk first came back to WWE, people were fantasy booking him and Rollins for WrestleMania. That looked like the likely destination. Punk against Roman Reigns. Maybe they can get Stone Cold to come back and do a WrestleMania match with Punk, which is not going to happen. Punk against Drew McIntyre is not a match that anybody would have thought of. Unfortunately, he got hurt, but this is a case where things happen. You know, sometimes in the universe, things happen the way they happen, whether you believe there's a reason for it or not. He got hurt. It was Drew who happened to be with him at the time that he got hurt on that Future Shock DDT. And now they've had Drew going out there playing Master Troll for months, and he's very good at it. It's really given him a chance to step up his game. And now we're building to a Drew McIntyre CM Punk match that feels bigger than anything else they could be doing with CM Punk right now. So it's great. And again, the fact that Punk no longer has the brace on the arm means that he is progressing nicely. Now, he tore his triceps. That's not an injury that you get cleared from in 3 or 4 months. So still, okay, he got hurt at the Rumble. That was the end of January. It feels like it's going to be a while yet before we get him back in the ring. I still think Clash at the Castle would be very optimistic. I'm still thinking it's the SummerSlam match, more so than Clash at the Castle. Clash at the Castle, I could see Drew going for the World Heavyweight title on that show. But if Punk were to be cleared by then, imagine in Scotland to do Drew McIntyre and CM Punk and what the atmosphere in that building would be if they could somehow get that match done on that show. That would be just an incredible atmosphere. I mean, doesn't matter who McIntyre's in the ring with, I would think. It's going to be an incredible atmosphere. But you do him and CM Punk on that show? I mean, that would be magic. It's like when Punk won the title for the first time against John Cena, Money in the Bank in Chicago, his hometown. The crowd was such a big part of that match. The atmosphere in the building that night. It's one of those matches that I wish I could have been there live for. This feels like a big deal. Whenever it happens, it's going to be a very big deal. That Teddy Long and Medusa were out next to announce the picks for round number 4 of the draft. With the first pick of the 4th round, Raw selects... Well, who did Raw select? Let's put them all up on the screen here. Blanked out for a second. Raw selects the Judgment Day, or what's left of the Judgment Day, because it is not the entire Judgment Day, as you can see there. It is Finn Balor, Dominic Mysterio, and JD McDonagh. With the 2nd pick of the 4th round, SmackDown selects Naomi. With the 3rd pick of the 4th round, Raw selects from NXT, this is the one I was waiting for, the Mad Dragon, Ilya Dragunov. Hell yes. Welcome to Raw. Or I should say, as Teddy Long called him, Illa. Which, I will say, I had a nice laugh at that one. I had a nice laugh. For whatever reason, he said Illa. It made me think of Willa. It made me think of Willa Ford for some reason. But anyway, Illa. So yes, we have Illa Dragunov, who is now officially on Monday Night Raw. Pat McAfee, though, he topped it. He topped it. Because Pat McAfee, he sounded incredulous when he said this. But on commentary, just the most hilarious line of the night. As he asks, because they put the graphic on screen showing Dragunov and his signature move and where he's from. And they had his signature move on there, which is the H-bomb. And McAfee just goes, his signature move is the H-bomb? Well, he has been working for Shawn Michaels. So I guess it kind of makes sense. And with the fourth pick of the fourth round, SmackDown selects Chelsea Green and Piper Niven. Judgment Day and Bloodline both getting chosen in the later rounds is very weird. I can understand it here because Rhea Ripley is not eligible to be drafted, which still has not been explained. We have other people in this draft who were hurt, who are nowhere near close to being medically cleared, Seth Rollins being one of them, CM Punk being another. And yet they were eligible to be drafted. Why Rhea Ripley would not be in the graphic and part of the Judgment Day here? Plus, I mean, we know when she comes back, she's going after Liv Morgan, who is on Raw. So I don't really understand the surprise here. Just put her with the Judgment Day, but for whatever reason, they didn't do that. But I understand, you know, she's not part of this pick. Dominic is hurt right now. He's another one. He's got his arm in a sling. So I can understand Judgment Day not being picked too early in this draft. Naomi is staying on SmackDown, so there's no change there. As far as Dragunov is concerned, the thing about Dragunov, other than the fact that he's fucking awesome at what he does, he's just great, love the fact that he landed on Raw. Because who else is on Raw? Gunther is on Raw. Plus Sheamus, plus Drew McIntyre. That is an incredible foursome of talent right there. I mean, there is going to be some ass-kicking happening on Monday nights, and I'm loving that. Chelsea and Piper to SmackDown. That should make Adam Pearce the happiest man in the world. Yes, that's exactly what Adam Pearce did, and that right there was his reaction when he found out that Chelsea Green is moving to Friday night. That, I would think that would help with his drinking problem that he's been having. He's a very happy man right now. We had Nia Jax one-on-one with Liv Morgan. Tiffany Stratton was shown sitting in the front row. Nia put Morgan in the corner and went to the ropes for the Annihilator. Jax was playing to the crowd, which allowed Liv to recover and powerbomb her from the middle rope. Got a pretty good stack on her too, but only got a two count. Naomi attacked Tiffany Stratton in the crowd and then dumped her over the barricade, if you remember what happened on Friday. After Nia Jax came out from the crowd and beat up Bayley, who was on commentary, and she beat up Naomi when she tried to help. Tiffany went up top and for the second week in a row hit a double prettiest moonsault ever to Bayley and Naomi. So this was Naomi's revenge. So she beat up Tiffany at ringside. Eventually Nia knocked Naomi down. Liv hit Nia with a code breaker. Not much of one. But she hit her with a code breaker, and that staggered her, and she fell backwards into the ropes, and then Liv went for Oblivion. She hit it, and then she pinned Nia Jax. Nia did not take those last two moves well at all. It looked like shit. So that was not good. The problem with this match, I mean, the match itself was fine. The problem with it, though, is that Liv is not much of a babyface right now. She's more of a heel, but if anything, maybe she's kind of in between. So she's not really a babyface. Nia is never a babyface. And so the crowd was quiet, and they didn't know how to react to it. Because who do you cheer for? Who do you want to see win this match? In this situation, you want to see Liv Morgan win. But it's like they couldn't figure out, okay, who do we get behind here? So they trotted out Bubba Ray Dudley and Devon Dudley, back out again, I should say, because they were there on Friday night as well. They trotted them out to read off the draft picks for the fifth round. They carried a table out on stage with them and set the table up and then just walked over to the podium to do their presentation. I don't know what the point of this was. The table never came into play. The table was never used. Nobody got put through the table. So I don't know why they carried it out there with them. But I guess it's part of their gimmick, and so there it is. But you're really going to tease the crowd like that, though? You bring a table out and you don't destroy it? I don't really understand that, but in any event, with the first pick of the fifth round, Raw selects Kofi Kingston and Xavier Woods, The New Day. With the second pick of the fifth round, SmackDown selects Elton Prince and Kit Wilson of Pretty Deadly. Third pick of the fifth round, Raw selects from NXT, Lyra Valkyria. And they cut to a shot of the Performance Center where all the NXT people were sitting around. And you can get a shot of her emotional reaction. She was crying. Shawn Michaels came over and they hugged. And with the fourth pick of the fifth round, SmackDown selects Candice LeRae and Indy Hartwell. They got drafted before Johnny Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa. L-O fucking L. How are you going to draft Candice LeRae and Indy Hartwell before DIY? Amazing. But it's what I said on Friday. You look at this graphic here, right? What is the first thing that hits you? Or maybe not the first thing, but you got two male picks and you got two female picks. So they tried to keep them even. But if you're having a draft and you want the best possible talent for your show, it just doesn't make the GMs look good. That's my point. Now, New Day and Pretty Deadly stay right where they are. New Day's been on Raw. Pretty Deadly's been on SmackDown since they got called up. Lyra is another pickup for the women's division on Raw, which is a plus. And it also means that we may be getting Becky and Lyra working together again a lot sooner than I thought they would. I mean, they already worked together in NXT that one time, but we may be getting to see them together again very soon. Now, we had one more round to go, which we will get to, but before we get to that, we had a tag team championship match, another match that was not promoted in advance. This was Miz and R-Truth defending their titles against Otis and Akira Tozawa of the Alpha Academy. So, I mean, I guess why bother, right? Why bother promoting it? You're not going to have a single fucking person that's going to tune into this show to see that match. If they knew it was happening in advance, they don't care. Alpha Academy didn't even get an entrance. And they joined the match already in progress. So, good sign there for your new World Tag Team titles. Joining the match already in progress here. So Miz booted Tozawa off the apron. Tozawa took a huge flip bump onto the mats. Otis dropped Miz and hit a caterpillar elbow. Tozawa went for a big diving senton. Miz got his knees up, though. And then Miz and Truth gave Tozawa their double team finish. I think they call it the skull-crushing Truth for the win. Every week that goes by, where those World Tag Team titles remain with R-Truth and Miz, every single week, they mean less and less and less. It is the law of diminishing returns here with this run. I wanted to see R-Truth beat Damian Priest, be the one to pin him or beat him and win the tag team titles of WrestleMania and get his WrestleMania moment. He got that moment. It was a ladder match with five other teams, but he got that moment. And I'm happy he got that moment. Now, it is time to prepare for life after Miz and R-Truth. This should not be a long title run. And I hope they have a plan for who they want to get those belts on very soon, because I really don't care to see them walking around with those belts for very long. This team is just nothing for me. I didn't care about Awesome Truth before. I don't really care about them as a team now. And every week that goes by, those titles are going to mean less and less and less, because comedy team. They do comedy stuff. Everything is comedy with them. It works for R-Truth, but again, after a while, you want those tag team titles to mean something. You want these tag team title matches to mean something. You've got to get them on some serious teams here, and so I hope they have plans to get these titles away from them soon, whenever that may be, but hopefully soon. Adam Pearce and Nick Aldis, they were out last here to announce the final round of the WWE draft. This was round number six. And with the first pick of the sixth and final round, Raw selects Karrion Kross, Scarlett, Paul Ellering, and AOP, the Final Testament. With the second pick, SmackDown selects Johnny Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa, so there's your DIY pick. With the third, of course, keeping them on the same brand with Indy and Candice, which is pretty much what I expected. With the third pick, Raw selects Big Bronson Reed. In case you didn't know he was big, there you see it in quote marks. He is a big man. And with the fourth and final pick, SmackDown selects from NXT, Blair Davenport, who, like Lyra earlier, got very emotional when her name was called, and she got a big hug from Shawn Michaels. She was in tears. Moving the Final Testament is going to be good for them. You know, now that their program with Lashley and the Street Profits has run its course, it's time to move on. So I think, if anything, it'll be a good move for them. DIY, like I said, no surprise, after Candice and Indy got drafted. Gargano and Ciampa, they really... Look, they had three different title opportunities going back to the beginning of the year. There was a tag team title match they got on TV sometime right after the Royal Rumble. It was either the very end of January or the very beginning of February. Then they were part of the ladder match at WrestleMania, and they lost there too. And then they had a tag team title match a few weeks ago. Actually, it might have been last week. I think it was last week, and they lost. So there were really only two options. You either turn them heel, or, which you could certainly do, because Indy and Candice have gone heel, so they can go heel too, but you either turn them heel, or you move them to another brand. Like a fresh coat of paint, you give them some new opponents, change of scenery, let them make a run at Austin Theory and Grayson Waller for the WWE Tag Team titles. Bronson Reed staying put was pretty obvious, given the way that Sammy's title match ended earlier in the night with him. And Blair Davenport to SmackDown. You know what? The Raw Women's Division, they got a nice shot in the arm tonight. They got a nice boost. But it doesn't mean that everybody has to go to one brand. Not everybody has to go to the Raw Women's Division. So SmackDown gets one. And it's a move that I like. So again, all three picks that I talked about on the podcast this weekend, I'm very happy that they all got drafted. Then we got to the main event, which never at any point felt like a main event. And the crowd also just ice cold. Ice cold for this match. Jey Uso, Ricochet, and Andrade. On Andrade's final match here on Raw. Final night on the brand because he is moving to SmackDown. Taking on Damian Priest, Finn Balor, and JD McDonagh of the Judgment Day. JD McDonagh had a big makeup job on his forehead from the shot earlier in the night that he took with the Super Bowl rings. And, towards the end of the match, it looked like it was starting to rub off a little bit. Went a little heavy on the makeup. So the crowd, like I said, they didn't care about this match. I mean, it was ridiculous. I mean, again, it was sort of the story of the night, but it certainly carried over here into this. Ricochet gave McDonagh a recoil and made the hot tag to Jey, who knocked Priest off the apron. Jey hit Balor with a flying crossbody. McDonagh, though, broke up the cover. Andrade hit McDonagh with a back elbow, and then Priest kicked Andrade and planted Ricochet with a flatliner. Damian Priest tagged himself in. He clotheslined Jey Uso. Jey slipped out of a razor's edge attempt and hit a Samoan drop. Dominic distracted the referee as Jey went up top. Priest caught him, and Priest was going to chokeslam Jey off the top, but McDonagh stepped in, and McDonagh shoved Jey Uso off the top rope instead. This infuriated Damian Priest, who looked at this guy and said, "What are you doing?" Because he had told him earlier in the night, "I don't need your help." And even in that spot, he's absolutely right. He has every right to be upset because he had the fucking match won. He was going to chokeslam this guy off the top rope. And then McDonagh sticks his nose into his business. So he has every right to be upset. As Priest and McDonagh were arguing, Jey superkicked Priest into Balor, knocked him off the apron. And then he superkicked Priest again, and then McDonagh for good measure. I think the announcers claimed that Balor had tagged in, but really it was just that Priest got knocked into him. But in any event, Jay gave Balor a spear. No reaction for the spear. Went up top, hit the splash, and got the win for his team. After the match, Jay and Priest, they had a face-off in the middle of the ring, as they mentioned Backlash coming up on Saturday, and that was Monday Night Raw. I was not a fan of the show on Friday, and I really was not a fan of the show tonight either, to be honest with you. This was another very dull show overall, and a very dull draft overall. The NXT picks are what I was most interested in, because it became very clear to me after the first night, and even the beginning of the second night here tonight, that we weren't going to get a lot of radical changes, you know, at least not at the very top of the card. So I was waiting to see who these new faces would be from NXT that would be called up, and they called up some good ones. But again, the format and the way that they did it and the majority of people staying right where they were, whether it makes sense or not, makes for a boring show. It makes for a boring draft. And if they are going to continue this going forward, they are going to have to make some changes to try to make it a little more interesting. And I wish that they would make more use of trades now that they have two general managers again for the first time in many, many years. You can accomplish the same exact thing, make it even more interesting by not taking away and detracting from the rest of the show, but you work that into the show, you work whatever NXT call-ups you want, you can get the same result by foregoing all of the draft nonsense and all the draft bullshit. And I know they're trying to piggyback off the NBA draft and the NFL draft, and they want to partake in the draft too. But if this is the way they're going to do it, it's just a fucking bore. And it's just not going to work. But now that it's over, now we can take a look at Raw and SmackDown. Now, let me just check real quick, because I'm sure that they had more picks after the show went off the air. And I just want to take a look and see if they have moved more people around. And I am not seeing anything right now. But there will be more moves off the air if they have not already been made. Let's talk about the updated Raw roster first. This is now the roster for Monday Night Raw. World Heavyweight Champion Damian Priest. Women's World Champion Becky Lynch, Intercontinental Champion Sami Zayn, World Tag Team Champions Miz and R-Truth. Those are your champions. Jey Uso, Seth Rollins, Bron Breakker, Liv Morgan, Ricochet, Sheamus, Chad Gable in the Alpha Academy, Kiana James from NXT, Alba Fire and Isla Dawn, Ivar, Shayna Baszler, Joey Stark. That's her brother. Maybe they'll introduce him to Monday Night Raw. Zoe Stark. Not Joey Stark. Fucking jeez. Zoe Stark. Imperium. Gunther and Ludwig Kaiser. Damage Control. All the members of Damage Control. CM Punk. Braun Strowman. LWO. Drew McIntyre. The Judgment Day. Ilya Dragunov. Or Illa. The New Day. Lyra Valkyria, The Final Testament, and Bronson Reed. That is the Monday Night Raw roster. Now here's the SmackDown roster. Undisputed Champion Cody Rhodes. Women's Champion Bayley. United States Champion Logan Paul. Tag Team Champions Grayson Waller and Austin Theory. Bianca Belair. Jade Cargill. Carmelo Hayes. Randy Orton. Nia Jax. LA Knight. The Bloodline, AJ Styles, Andrade, Baron Corbin, who is back from NXT, the OC, Cedric Alexander, I almost fell asleep reading that part, Cedric Alexander and Ashanti the Adonis, Kevin Owens, The Pride, Tiffany Stratton, Legado del Fantasma, Shinsuke Nakamura, Naomi, Chelsea and Piper, Pretty Deadly, Candice and Indy, DIY, and Blair Davenport. There's a lot of talent on both shows. I think that they have shaken things up enough where hopefully going forward now they'll be able to work some, you know, interesting programs in there on both shows. So there's definitely some great talent on both sides. It's not overly lopsided, I don't think, one side over the other. But to me, it's clear who won out here in this draft, and who won out in the draft is Monday Night Raw. I think Raw ends up being the stronger of the two shows. obviously that roster is a little bit bigger because it's a longer show. It's a bigger show, you get a bigger roster. You have an extra hour of television time every single week, so that makes sense. But I think Raw got the better end of it. Raw got the better end of it, especially when you have people like Bron Breakker and Ilya Dragunov on the show, because they're now on the same brand. And as I said earlier, Dragunov, Gunther, Sheamus, Drew. Then you throw in Punk, and again, you have a great mix of guys there. And they strengthen the women's division, which is something they desperately needed to do. I look at that SmackDown roster, and Cody has very few viable challengers. Cody is working with AJ Styles at Backlash this weekend. We'll see if they have another match after this. They could probably get one more out of it if they want to. After AJ, I see Randy Orton. You got to do Cody and Randy at some point, right? That one's obvious. But then you get past Randy Orton, and I'm looking here. I'm going to bring it up again here. I'm looking at the SmackDown roster, and what am I seeing here? Carmelo Hayes? It's too soon for that. And Cody just beat him anyway on TV last week. So Hayes is not going to be working with Cody Rhodes for the title anytime soon. LA Knight. I don't really see that unless they turn LA Knight heel. I see LA Knight going after Logan Paul in the U.S. title. So take LA Knight out of the equation. I don't see that happening. You've got Andrade. Nobody is going to care if Andrade is going to be challenging Cody for the title. They'll have a very good match, and that's not a pay-per-view match. That's not a big main event in the eyes of most people. So Andrade is not yet at that level where I feel like he is a viable challenger for the Undisputed title. He really hasn't done much of anything since he's come back. So let him build himself up a little bit more. He's not going to be a realistic opponent for Cody. Kevin Owens? Kevin Owens could be. Either as a heel or a babyface. So you got Orton and you got Owens. Logan Paul right now is the U.S. champion. If he drops that title, could we have Cody and Logan? Sure. I don't see that probably until much later on in the year, if they do it at all. That's a possibility. But that's about it. That's it. I don't see anything else. I mean, Roman Reigns is gone at the moment. Right? I think they're going to probably keep Cody and the Bloodline away from each other as much as they can. When Roman comes back, he's going to be a babyface anyway. So I don't really see a whole lot of challengers for Cody Rhodes here. That's where trades come in. Maybe we'll have trades as the year goes on. You don't have to wait for the draft. You can have the GMs creatively. If you're trying to come up with plans here and you're like, shit, this guy's on Raw. What do we do here? The draft is not for another 9 months. Who cares? You can work a trade into the story somehow. Come up with a reason why. You can move people whenever you want. Just make it make sense. Just make it logical. Just give us a reason for it. Don't just have people randomly showing up on the shows. And then when we get to the draft every April, it's like, oh, it's the draft and the rosters lock. So have the rosters been unlocked for the past 12 months? Is that why we've had people going back and forth? Because somebody forgot to take the key and lock the roster? Is that what happened here? I mean, they talk about this stuff, but I guarantee you give it a few months and I guarantee you that they're going to be going back and forth. And then that's another reason why this format doesn't work if they don't take it seriously. One thing Paul Levesque has to do is take the draft seriously and make it a true brand split. If he doesn't do that, then this is no better than what it was under Vince McMahon. You either do a draft because you were serious about a brand split or you don't. Time will tell how serious he is about this. But make use of those trades. I feel like that makes it more interesting, too, to see the two GMs working together, going back and forth, negotiating. I wish we would get to see more of that on these shows. We get that from time to time, but not really. I mean, they play up the competition between them, but we don't really see that sort of thing happen very often. Now, again, I don't have it in front of me. If they have, in fact, you know, made these additional moves yet, but what I can tell you is that when this show went off the air tonight, these are the names that were still undrafted as of 11 o'clock tonight. Apollo Crews, apparently nobody wants him. Caden Carter and Katana Chance. Giovanni Vinci. Tegan Knox. Odyssey Jones. I am not sure why they even bothered to draft him to Monday Night Raw last year. He made not one single appearance on Monday Night Raw in the last year.
is a direction you can fuck.
Hey, Hydrograd, thank you. Thank you for the 23, man. Odyssey Jones has not spent a second on Monday Night Raw in the year that he has been on that roster. So I'm not sure why they called him up in the first place, but as of the end of Raw tonight, he was still undrafted. Tyler Bate and Pete Dunne, New Catch Republic, not drafted yet. Creed Brothers and Ivy Nile and Natalya. Creed Brothers better end up on Raw so we could eventually get Chad Gable and the Creeds once he realizes that Otis and Tozawa and Maxine are dead weight and he gets rid of them. And then we get Gable and the Creeds together as a heel trio. Now, I put a poll up on Twitter. It's a little bit different than the usual one. I figure instead of just asking you guys about Raw, and I'm seeing somebody mention Dijak, Donovan Dijak is on Raw. New Catch Republic goes to Raw. Giovanni Vinci goes to SmackDown. Okay, so those are some updates right there. This poll is about the draft. What did you think overall of the 2024 WWE draft? And it's almost a dead heat. Look at this. 50.3% give this draft a thumbs up. 49.7% give this draft a thumbs down. It is a virtual dead heat. 50-50, damn near, for people who liked it or hated it. I do appreciate all of the support that you guys have thrown my way. I love it. Love it, love it, love it. All right, let's take a look and see here. What did you think of this draft? Now that the draft is over, I'm very happy this draft is over. I'm ready to move on and get back to normal here. All right, let's start off here with Kentucky Dried Chicken was the first one in. And Kentucky Dried Chicken says, oh no, Patrick Mahomes. Did Mahomes turn heel or just dumb babyface syndrome? I swear to you that I thought I heard some boos mixed in with all the cheers when they first showed him on screen. I really did. Jordy, yep, Montesi is the one who did Sammy Guevara's theme in AEW. Yeah, he's done some good stuff. You'll see a lot of it up on his channel, so make sure you check it out. The Winston Slip, nice to see mullets making a comeback lately. What do you think? What do you think? Should I try? You think a mullet would look good on me? You think a mullet would bring in the subs here to the channel? I don't know. On me, I don't know if it would work. DEH Sires with a pair of super chats. Seeing Lyra's reaction makes me root for her. Yeah, she was very overwhelmed with emotion when she heard her name called. Raw is now the A show by far. I think so. Just in terms of the roster, I think so. We'll see how it plays out in the months to come. Arabian Night, NXT is shallow, has no appeal, and recent TV-ready free agents like Santana, Hammer, and now Camille turning down NXT deals is a clear sign. If they offer Ricky Starks an NXT deal, I don't think he would be making the jump. I think it comes down to money as well. And I don't know what they offered Camille. There was something about the offer that obviously she did not like. She had an NXT offer supposedly in hand, and she evidently ended up going with AEW. So was it just a money issue? Did she feel as if she was too good to be spending time in NXT? Unless she says, we don't know for sure, but all I know is that NXT has a big CW television deal that's going to be starting at the very end of this year, and they're going to probably be loading that show up at the very beginning because they're going to want that show to be a success. So as we get closer to the beginning of the next television season and they migrate from USA to CW, remember what they did in October when they sent The Undertaker and John Cena and all those people to NXT? Cody. Don't be surprised if they do something like that and then some. My cat is a demon. with a super chat. If they insist on doing the draft next year, I would rather they just take the format from the mid-2000s. Raw and SmackDown guys face off. Winner gets a draft pick for their brand at random instead of this. Even that would be better. This journey called life. Drew Hackintyre. CM Punk is the best. Jackie Fowler. Here we go. Now we're picking up here with the list. If I had to make a prediction as to who the Wyatt Six are going to be, I would say Uncle Howdy, Alexa Bliss, Eric Rowan, Shawn Spears, and the Hardy Boys. The Hardy Boys as part of that group, I don't see that. Although Matt is a free agent, and Matt did just mention the other day that his brother's contract with AEW was up a lot sooner than they all expected. Doesn't mean that Tony Khan can't tack some time on to the end of that contract at the very last minute, because Jeff missed a lot of time. And apparently he has not tacked that extra time on, but he can if he wants to. So if he wanted to keep Jeff on ice, he could do whatever he wants, but Matt certainly indicated that Jeff's contract was going to be up a lot sooner than they all expected. Jerome Eugenio, drafting whole factions was lame and lazy booking. Justin Lasby, do you believe in Joe Hendry? No. Barry MK400, what comes first, milk or cereal? Cereal. What kind of a monster are you? This journey called life, which female roster is better all around, WWE or AEW? I wish I had a visual aid here to support it, because AEW has so many women, I don't even remember everybody they have. I feel like AEW overall may have the stronger women's roster at the moment. Are we talking main roster, or are we talking like all in, like NXT too? WWE has three brands, okay? AEW has one. Unless you count Ring of Honor as like their satellite brand. You throw Athena in there, and Billy Starks, and some of those people, right? Sheeta's been wrestling in Ring of Honor for a little while. I'll say AEW, but I mean WWE, it's not as if when you take all of the women they have, it's not as if they're not stacked with female talent. Luis Rodriguez, again, Luis, thank you for the $99.99. Says he is leaving for Cuba on Wednesday. So he's going to miss a couple of shows, but we'll be here for you. I'm not going nowhere. Have a safe trip. David Thering with the $50. Again, talking about iShow speed. At this point, being useful enough to fit in Braun Strowman's pocket. I was disappointed that Braun didn't, you know, choke slam him or power bomb him or put him through a table or do something to him. Barry, thank you for the $2. Jace Chua. I like the old format better, where they use every pick to take superstars away from the other brand. Alex, Brother Solo. Other than the WWE draft, is there another concept in WWE that has been played out and has run its course and you would get rid of? Yeah, Money in the Bank. But they're not going to do that. Bleed Boston, if FTC goes through with banning non-compete agreements, how do you think this affects WWE? Do you think it'll make them hesitate releasing talent in the future? I talked about this on the show yesterday. If you want to go back and check out episode 859. The jury is still out, really, on exactly how this is going to affect wrestling. My guess is they're just going to work things a little bit differently, where I don't think it's going to make that big of a difference. Again, the way it works usually is they'll pay you for those 90 days that you have to sit at home. If somebody were to forego that money and say, I don't want to be paid, would that automatically release... And I'm talking about the way the non-competes are right now. Would that automatically release them from that non-compete? My guess would be no, but that's never really been clarified. But again, it's just, it's more a case of, hey, we're notifying you that in 90 days you will no longer be employed. And it's one thing if you are paying the person and therefore not allowing them to go sign somewhere else. If they were firing you and not paying you and saying you can't work somewhere within your industry for a period of 90 days, I don't see how that's legal. You know, that sounds completely fucked up to me. If they're outright banned, you know, if you read the FTC stuff, it's immediate. It goes to future non-competes. It goes to existing non-competes for everybody except for senior executives. It doesn't apply to them. But it could have some implications. I just think it's not going to make for any radical changes. You know, I think they'll kind of game the system any way they can, and it'll probably work the way it usually does. I don't think it's going to be a case where somebody gets their 90-day notice and then they show up on Dynamite 2 days later. I just think they'll find a way to work things a little bit differently. Maybe they won't officially fire you. They'll tell you that in 90 days we're going to fire you. But we're going to keep you under contract. You're still technically under contract and hired, but in 90 days, we'll release you at that point. They'll come up with some fucking slimy way around it. They always do. They always get away with this shit. I'm sure they'll find some way around it, right? They always do. M. Mills, thank you for the 1992. And they're still getting away with classifying their talent as independent contractors, even though they tell them where to be, how to dress, what to do. You can't go here, you can't sign there. Yeah, that sounds real independent to me. Chi-Town 657, I really hope the draft would break up the LWO. The only person who won gold since they have been together is Ray. Dom was right. Ray is a deadbeat dad. Right, he's a deadbeat partner too. Takes all the glory, overshadows all the other people in his faction. Who does he think he is? Chris Jericho? The real CS. Dijak got drafted to Raw off the air. Glad he gets a second chance on the main roster. I don't know, man. I worry. Now that they move Nakamura to SmackDown, he may be in the Shinsuke Nakamura spot. Where he may not win very many matches. I hope he does get a fair shot, though. You know, he is very talented. DEH. Pretty clear that Roxanne is being saved for Julia. Well, Julia may be in as early as July, so I think you may be right. The Juliet, 316. Only Darby Allin could no-sell getting hit by a bus. Very on-brand for Darby. Just getting hit by the bus is very on-brand for Darby. Getting hit by a bus while he is healing from a broken foot. That is peak Darby Allin. Yeah, if you didn't hear that, he got hit by a bus here in New York City. His nose was all bloody and fucked up. And then that night, he went to a Broadway show. There you go. Barry says, if his signature is the H-bomb, is his finisher the F-bomb? I don't know. Seymour Tang. The biggest problem was that it felt like they were obligated to do the draft and rush the plan. The injuries did not help either. And again, just the inconsistencies. Like, why are some injured people eligible to be drafted and not others? This was never explained. Seymour also says, Triple H played his first draft safe, so it was inconsequential. A dull draft is not a black eye on him. Just a reminder that he is not perfect, nor is Khan. I don't know anybody who said that he was. There is no such thing. Arabian Night 2000. Two bronze on Raw. Smell a first name being chopped. Well, Braun is short for Bronson. But I guess we already have a Bronson. So I think if he stays Bronson and Braun is just Braun, then they should be okay. If they called him Bronson, which is his real first name, Bronson Reichsteiner, then they might have an issue. Hydrograd 57 says, remember 15 to 20 years ago, they would only announce the people who were actually getting drafted instead of drafting people to the show that they were already on. This is why I hate having everyone as a free agent before the draft. Prince Vegeta. Hey, Charles, welcome to the channel. Prince Vegeta says they can flip Lashley to feud with Cody. Yes, they can. That's absolutely true. You could do Cody and Lashley. You know, we never got Lashley and Roman, shockingly enough. So they could always do Cody and Lashley. Eli 101, today marks 25 years of the pilot episode of SmackDown. And what was your thoughts on it back in the day? And which wrestlers are going to be part of the new Raw 6 and the SmackDown 6 as of right now? I don't know. The SmackDown 6 was a special thing. There is no SmackDown 6 now. With Raw, I'm going to call it the Raw 4. And the Raw 4 are Drew, Sheamus, Gunther, and Ilya. That's going to be your Raw 4. As far as my thoughts on the SmackDown pilot, I loved it. You know, it's funny. Back then, there wasn't enough wrestling. Like, I couldn't get enough. If they had, like, a WWE network back then, I would never leave my house. Like, that was, to a younger wrestling fan, it was just a dream scenario, right? And now we have it. Now it's like there's too much wrestling every single week. There's too much. There's so much of it now. I can't keep up with all of it. It's impossible. But when SmackDown came on in 99, I was glued to the TV. I was like, this is great. You know, and then you had the first official SmackDown, which was in August, which had Rock and Triple H in the main event. Shawn Michaels was the guest referee. But yeah, people forget about the pilot and that tag team main event that they had on the, I guess it would have been April, right? I mean, I guess it would have been today. So yeah, April of 99, and then the show officially started in August. Jackalope Music with the 1999. Jay Jackalope, thank you. Is it too early to call Triple H Booker of the Year? Yes, it is. Do you think Dusty's son could compare if Khan gave him the job? Hashtag we want Dustin. I don't know what Dustin would be like. You know, creatively, I have no idea. I know Dustin is training people, and I think Dustin is probably a fantastic trainer because Dustin has always been a very good wrestler. I don't know that he has the creative mind, or maybe he does. You know, there are some guys who are great wrestlers and have really terrible ideas. And then you have people maybe that aren't the best wrestlers and they could have the best mind for it. And they could be very creative. Dustin has never booked the territory. He's never booked for a major promotion, so I don't know. I can't say how good he would be or wouldn't be. Alex with the $10 super chat says, do you feel like the time between Mania and SummerSlam is filler in terms of storyline and booking? Also, are you planning on going live immediately after Backlash? As always, much love. Yes, Backlash is at 1 o'clock Eastern on Saturday, and as soon as it's over, so figure around 4 o'clock or so, 4:30, I will be live right here on YouTube. So the answer is yes. As far as filler, it's summer. It's going to be the start of summer. Look, today, it was summer in New York today. It was fucking 80 degrees outside. You think I wanted to be cooped up in here? I was, but, you know, when the weather gets nicer, people want to get out. You know, shows go on hiatus, except wrestling, you know, but a lot of network shows go on hiatus. Summer is always a tough period for wrestling. And it does kind of feel like a filler period. I would agree with you on that. That's going to be up to Mr. Levesque to make it interesting and not feel like filler. Since we are now in the Paul Levesque era, right? They've made that very clear. Then I guess that would make this the first official Paul Levesque summer. We've got Slim Yoshi. I know it's been said already, but the main roster audience is in for a treat. When we eventually get Gunther versus Dragunov, I just hope the main roster audience gets attached to Dragunov. I think they will. I was worried about Gunther at first. I didn't know how the main roster audience would take to him, and they took to him just fine. And it's a combination of how well WWE has booked him and protected him. They've done a masterful job with Gunther. Gunther even said that if it was a prior regime in this company, he would not have even wanted to be on the main roster. He says it would have been a disaster. He would not have wanted to do it. But under Triple H, and that to be fair, when he first became the Intercontinental Champion, Vince McMahon was still running the show. I think it was literally the same month that he beat Ricochet for that title that first Wall Street Journal story dropped. So for how long would Vince McMahon have, you know, gotten behind Gunther and stayed with him? Would he have beaten him a lot sooner? Maybe yes, maybe no. But it is worth mentioning that he was still in power when Gunther first won the title. So he must have seen something in him. But Triple H obviously does. And so he's going to be protected. He's going to be just fine. The fans took to Gunther. They react big to his matches. He's had some great matches. He's established himself very well. If he could do that, then I believe Dragunov can do it as well. Dragunov is a special talent. He's very emotive with his facial expressions and his mannerisms. Sometimes maybe he goes even a little overboard with it. He's very animated in that way. And he sells, my God, I mean, the way that he sells a beating this guy. So he's just excellent. And I think that the main roster audience should take to him just fine. And when he eventually gets into the ring with Gunther, like you said, people are going to be in for a treat. I think the other thing also about Dragunov that people will appreciate, he looks, when he goes in there and he wrestles somebody, it looks like he himself is taking a beating, and he puts a beat down on his opponents to where he makes it look real and authentic. You don't look at somebody like him and think, oh, he's in there doing spots. Oh, he's in there, he's play fighting. Like, you can get lost in it and feel like, wow, this guy's in a fucking war here. And I think the crowd appreciates that. I think the crowd wants to believe that they're watching a real fight, you know, when these guys are out there. So if that's what you're interested in, then you'll definitely become an Ilya Dragunov fan. Very few times does Dragunov come out of a match without having some kind of welt or, you know, some kind of like a handprint or like a, you know, burst blood vessels on his chest or... I mean, he comes out of it, he looks like he's been in a fucking battle, this guy. So, yeah, I think people are going to take just fine to him. Nick Grasso, the $9.99. My prediction for the Howdy family, is that what they're calling themselves now, the Howdy family? Is Uncle Howdy, Alexa Bliss, Eric Rowan, Joe Gacy, and Dexter Lumis. Since he wasn't drafted, which was odd, and after tonight, I assume Braun Strowman will not be involved. Joe Gacy would be a good fit from NXT. I don't know what's going on with Dexter Lumis. I really don't. I have no idea. They just took him off TV. He's not hurt. I guess they just didn't have anything for him. He was not eligible to be drafted. We still have no further update on the status of Dexter Lumis. Bobby Means, I honestly think that a women's intercontinental title could do wonders for the mid-card, plus I think there's a chance Tatum Paxley wins the NXT women's title. Well, don't forget they're also introducing a women's North American title. I don't know who the favorite would be right now. I have to pay closer attention to NXT. I haven't been doing that lately. But I do know they're introducing a second women's title. And I have myself argued for a women's intercontinental title. Although when I talk about it, it's in place of the women's tag team titles, not in addition to it. But at some point, I think we're going to get one at some point. Whether they call it the intercontinental title, I don't know. But do I believe we will get a secondary singles women's title on the main roster at some point? Yes, absolutely. I don't know when, but I do believe. I think that women's North American title is an experiment. I think that could be a sign of what's to come on the main roster. They try things out sometimes in NXT, see how it goes, and then they could apply it to Raw and SmackDown. I think this is one of those situations. Arabian Nights, did Dragon Lee get drafted? He was not in the LWO graphic. I believe they said he was, so yes. Yes, he was. TK Banks, Raw wins just for the fact that Drew, Sheamus, Gunther, Dragunov, Pete Dunne, Tyler Bate, and Dijak are all on the same show. Intercontinental title picture is stacked. That's right. You didn't mention that Gable is still going after that belt as well. I'm telling you, Raw came out on the winning end of this draft. Super Pony, KO should win Money in the Bank and cash in on Punk when he wins the world title. I don't think that's going to happen, though. Barry says, buy or sell on Three's Company or I Love Lucy. I was a Three's Company kid. Prince Vegeta, what match do you believe goes on last on Saturday? Last on Saturday? I mean, why would it be anything other than Cody? Cody is the man who beat Roman Reigns at WrestleMania. Cody is the one who closed out, in their word, the biggest WrestleMania of all time. Why would he not headline Backlash? He's on the poster. You think Damian Priest and Jey Uso are going to headline Backlash? It's going to be Cody and AJ Styles. The goal for our Be the Booker segment tonight was 450 likes. It has now been unlocked. Unlike the WWE roster next Monday, Be the Booker has been unlocked. I thank you guys for that. Ending the month of April here on a high note. You always love to see it. Let's go ahead and be the Booker.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to be the Booker.
Final one here for the month of April. Let's do it the right way. Here we go. Let's crack the knuckles. There we go. Let's do the deal. We'll start out here with the tag teams, as we usually do. And we begin with the Mega Powers. This was like the mother of all tag teams when I was a kid. When they put these two together, my God, these two were unstoppable. Hey, Muhammad. Shout out, my friend. What's going on? Muhammad's joining us in the chat. Hulk Hogan and the Macho Man. Randy Savage. Ooh, yeah. With the lovely Elizabeth. My first crush. My first crush. The lovely Elizabeth. All right. Who are Hogan and Savage going to beat? Who is doing the job for Hogan and Savage? Rey and Dominic Mysterio. Oh, I want to see Rey Mysterio and Hulk Hogan in the ring together. That's what I want to see. How's that for a match? How's that? Mega Powers against Rey and Dom. See, that's what Be the Booker's all about, man. It makes you think. What would a match like that look like? Hulk Hogan having to sell... Hulk Hogan having to go down into the ropes for the 619. And then when Rey hits it, he just hulks up like nothing and no-sells it and kills the poor guy. Classic Hogan. On the women's side, we have got AJ Lee. Former Divas champion, AJ Lee. A lot of people want AJ Lee back. In WWE, AJ Lee does not want to come back. Because if AJ Lee wanted to come back, she would have been in the Royal Rumble this year. AJ Lee going to go one-on-one with Queen Zelina. Nope. Not for me. We go. Main event time. Main event time. We close out this edition of Be the Booker. Oh, it's Ibushi. Kota Ibushi. This was peak Ibushi right here. He's got the IWGP title in one hand, the IWGP Intercontinental title in the other hand. physical, like physically, he's at his physical peak here. The man looks like he's chiseled out of stone. When he would go into that murder Ibushi mode, I mean, he was scary. And to see what he was when he walked into AEW was very sad. And in a relatively short period of time, too. I mean, I know he got 2 years older, but it's like in a 2 year span, he went from this to what he was in AEW. It's like he's not even the same person. But right now, he's, you know, trying to heal up, and that's the most important thing. Hopefully, he gets himself well. But Ibushi was the fucking man back then. And let's see who Ibushi is going to be defending his two IWGP titles against. The Golden Star one-on-one with Rowdy Roddy Piper. That is the most random match that I think I could possibly book. Kota Ibushi against Rowdy Roddy Piper. I feel like Piper would have loved to have had a DDT match with Ibushi. I don't know. I kind of feel like it's the sort of thing that Piper would have thrived in. Was doing a match in DDT against Kota Ibushi. What a match. What a match, man. This is why we do this. This is why we do Be the Booker, man. It just makes you think about what kind of match would that look. What would that look like? Ibushi and Piper. What would those promos look like? I don't know. Ibushi's not known for his promos. Piper, on the other hand, I think he could have sold it all by himself. Creflo Half Dollar with the $5. The Mega Powers botch was all-time great, too, with Brutus Beefcake cutting in too early and casually saying sorry and Savage flinging Elizabeth. Yeah, that was the Mega Powers breakup angle. And, I remember watching that live. And I had it on VHS, and I think it was erased over many years ago. Now it's on the network, and all the botches are all edited out. That was not the only botch. That was a botchtastic night. They were live on NBC that night. I'll give you a little history lesson here. So they were live on NBC. It was the main event. It was February 5th, I want to say, 3rd or 5th, 1989. And it's the main event. And it's the last big angle they're going to shoot heading into WrestleMania 5, which still has no main event. And Savage is the champion. It's him and Hogan against the Big Boss Man and Akeem. And they had Elizabeth take this really, I mean, it was a big bump. She's standing outside the ring, and Elizabeth is this tiny woman. And Savage gets thrown by Akeem through the ropes, and he took her out. Like, he took this woman out. So now Hogan comes over to check on Savage's wife, although she wasn't acknowledged as Savage's wife at the time, but she was. And he is so upset over what happened to Elizabeth. He's calling for help. Nobody is coming out. I mean, today you'd have fucking referees and security geeks and agents and producers in 2 seconds. Elizabeth is dead on the floor. Nobody comes out to help. Hogan is begging somebody for help. So he picks her up and he leaves. Pays no attention to the fact that his partner is now being beaten up 2-on-1. They go to the back, and when they come back from commercial, the scene is Hogan is, he's basically, I think he's on his knees. And he's leaned over Elizabeth, and I think he's got her hands like clasped to his, and he's waiting for his time cue because he doesn't know that they're already back live on NBC. And so Hogan starts talking in Carney, and he's going, I'm going to get a countdown here. What's the tizime? What's the tizime here, right? And somebody obviously told him, hey, we're live. And then he gets back into character and he starts crying. Oh, my God, are you okay? My God, oh, my God, he didn't mean it. Randy didn't mean it. So that's botch number one, okay? Meanwhile, Savage is getting murdered in the ring. Now, eventually, Elizabeth tells him, I'm good. Go, 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 Randy. Go help Randy. And Hogan runs back to the ring, right? So he comes back. Savage goes over to make the tag, slaps the taste out of his mouth, walks out. Now Hogan's by himself, right? But there was another botch here during the match, and it's amazing that Akeem didn't break his fucking neck. I don't know what happened. somehow the rope, I think somebody maybe stepped on the rope. Akeem just very gently went to go fall back into the ropes because him and Bossman were going to do a double splash. No, maybe Bossman hit the ropes first. I think that's what happened. Akeem fell through the ropes. And I mean, you talk about like when you take a shot in basketball, it's like, oh, nothing but net, right? Like swoosh, right? In it goes. He didn't touch the ropes. He just fell right through the middle and bottom rope and crashed down on the floor. He probably got folded up. Akeem was like 400 fucking pounds. I mean, he's a giant man. I don't know how he didn't get hurt doing that. So it's hilarious, but obviously he didn't break his neck or anything, so you could laugh at it. But that was botch number two. So, of course, Hogan wins the match by himself. Now he goes to the back. He's going to go find Savage. He wants to find out why he did that. Why did you do that, right? So he goes back there, and he and Savage have their little back and forth. And Savage ends up clocking him with the title. And Hogan ends up, he knocks Hogan into like the hospital tray. Everything gets knocked over. And Savage is like pounding on this guy. Elizabeth gets up out of the bed and she's like going to protect Hulk. And as this is going on, at some point in this whole, as Vince McMahon used to say, this whole melee, Brutus Beefcake was supposed to run in and stop Savage from using the title, right? Because he picked up the belt. He's going to hit Hogan with it. He ran in too early, though. So as, you know, he pointed out, you could hear him like apologize and you see him quickly go back off camera. So that was botch number three. But he grabbed Elizabeth. He said, look, you either move out of the way or I'm going to splatter you all over him, right? Get out of the way because she's shielding him. He grabbed this woman. I'm hoping that they either had a bunch of people waiting to catch her or a mattress for her to fall on or something. He grabbed this woman by the arm. And my God, the way that he hurled her backwards, I'm hoping like Andre was standing there to like break her fall and catch her. He launched her backwards off camera. You couldn't even see where she landed. But then, you know, officials came in to break it up. And that's when we got the scene after when Hogan finally recovers and he's crazed out of his mind and he goes down the hallway. And who does he run into? Who does he assault in the hallway? Bret Hart. Part of the Hart Foundation, and Shawn Michaels, part of the Rockers. He's asking, where's Randy, right? He's like throwing him aside. That's kind of an interesting historical note there. That angle is still seared into my brain all these years later. Like that was, as a young fan at the time, it was such a big deal to see that, that it just sticks with you. You don't forget major angle like that. That and the twin Hebner incident the year before. I feel like we were spoiled back then. We really were. We really were spoiled. Woody Allen's right-hand man says, do you think Marty Jannetty really made men disappear? The man thinks he's some kind of mafia don. He'll have you he'll have you sleeping with the fishes. Now, Jannetty strikes me as the kind of guy who's probably sleeping in, like, crack dens and stuff. So I would take what he says with a mound of salt. I am skeptical at best of the stories that he tells. Jackalope Music, someone showed me your Raw Meltdown episode years ago, and I have watched a bunch of episodes since. Today you called Raw the A-Show. Love me some Triple H. Raw has come a long way since those days. Raw is far from perfect, but it has come a long way from the dark days of 2018. What is that review? What was that review up to, by the way? Is it 137,000 views or something? And Creflo says, would AJ versus Zelina get the buzzer in House of Glory? I feel like as an independent wrestling match, the crowd would be hyped for it. Yeah, of course it would be. To get AJ Lee back in the ring? Or to get WWE permission for us to use Zelina and we have AJ against Zelina booked as a women's match at Hog? Of course I would book that match. But when we do Be the Booker, you got to understand something. When we do Be the Booker, I'm trying to book matches that I look at as like WrestleMania caliber or SummerSlam caliber, like a big event. You know what I mean? And so I look at that match, and that to me screams like a Raw match or a SmackDown match. That doesn't scream pay-per-view women's championship match to me. That's the whole point of Be the Booker. You're trying to book these like fantasy type matchups, and that just, it just doesn't cut the mustard for me. But sure, to show like that, of course, I would sign that in a heartbeat if I could. Woody Allen's right-hand man says, I see Becky Lynch getting unmerciful hate in her Instagram post from a few hours ago. Wrestling fans can be terrible. She is just doing her job. Well, what are they so upset about? Just that her in general? Or was it something? I didn't see the post, so I don't know if she said something in the post or if they're just upset at her because she won the title last week. So they're directing hate at her. Hey, guys. It's a work. If you have a problem with the booking, go let Triple H know. I guess it's still real to them. Anyway, if you missed episode 859, it was a good one. Over 2 hours. Go check that out tomorrow on your commute. Or at home, or at the gym. It'll be there for you on Spotify and Apple Podcasts and all the usual platforms. Spreaker, of course. Wednesday night is AEW Dynamite. What a show it was last week. We dissected that as well on the podcast. How will they follow up on this angle? We got Kenny Omega in Winnipeg on Wednesday. What's going to happen to Kenny? As I said yesterday, if you want to get heat on the Elite and Jack Perry, if that is your singular goal here, is to get as much heat as you possibly can on those men. The best way to do that is to have them go out there and murder Kenny Omega in Canada. I don't know that Kenny Omega is leaving that show on his own two feet tomorrow. Unless Tony Khan in his absence makes him the fucking general manager of the show or something. failing that, I see this as more a way to write him off for good, to let him go have his surgery. And so what better way than to put heat on the Elite? But that's my prediction. We'll talk about that on Wednesday night after the show. In the meantime, make sure you go ahead and hit that subscribe button. If you are new here, if you are lurking and have not subscribed, now would be a great time to do so. We are marching closer to 80,000 subscribers. I would love to get there in the next few months, if possible. That would be cool. So go ahead and do that. Hit the like button. I will be back with you very soon. So be well, stay safe, and we'll do it all over again for Dynamite. Kicking off the month of May. May 1st. I'll see you back here. Take care, guys.